you really want to think of root cause. You want to get behind the emotional trauma and you want to bring it back to the brain.
The brain is resilient, but recovery shouldn't be a solo journey. Welcome to the Healing Brain Trauma Podcast. From the operating room to the living room and everywhere in between, licensed clinical social worker Dr. Kathleen Monahan and neurosurgeon Dr. Edie Zussman break down the science of injury and the art of healing. If you're navigating life after a diagnosis or supporting someone who is, join us as we transform complex neurobiology into hope and actionable tools for your recovery. Today's episode is Why Healing Brain Trauma Matters. You're going to meet the hosts, Dr. Edie Zussman and Dr. Kathleen Monahan, for an introduction to the podcast.
Hi, I'm Dr. Edie Zussman. I'm a trauma neurosurgeon, and I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to work with my dear colleague, Dr. Kathy Monahan.
Hi, I'm Dr. Kathleen Monahan, otherwise known as Kathy, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker and been in the field for a couple of years. And it was my delight to meet Dr. Edie Zussman, neurosurgeon, and start to talk. We started talking about the things that we had in common in this field of mental health issues and brain trauma. So we're happy today to be here.
We're looking forward to continuing these conversations and recording them and sharing them in the form of a podcast. Essentially, my traumatic brain injury expertise from taking care of folks all the way from sports injuries to, you know, comas and blood clots in my operating room. My background is in the structure and the function of the brain. And what we've learned so much is that a lot of things that we as neurosurgeons think of as symptoms of traumatic brain injury, they can come into Kathy's office without the history of brain injury, without the known history of brain injury, and they look like a mental health situation.
So way back when, I believe it's 1995, I was working in a domestic violence shelter and began to see women coming into the shelter who looked like they had a brain injury on top of the trauma of intimate partner violence. And that really got my interest going. So since that time, I've been looking at the commensurate issues of mental health symptomatology, or sometimes people being diagnosed with anxiety or depression when there really is the overlap with a traumatic brain injury. And then it was my good fortune to meet Edie, and we began conversations, and we've been working on how can we help people out in the field, both professionals and survivors, with discussions, having discussions about some of the types of things they may encounter in terms of symptoms, some of the things that they may encounter in terms of overlapping symptomatology, and just generally helping people understand what it is they're experiencing.
To me, I think the most important thing is bringing this brain injury awareness to what we're currently providing in such a beautiful and positive way, which is trauma-informed care. What we're learning from our research and others is that individuals who've experienced trauma and who have mental health sequelae of trauma, oftentimes as part of that trauma, have had traumatic brain injury. And it looks as though there's a gap in the way we think about traumatic brain injury where we're not counting whiplash mechanisms of traumatic brain injury. We're not counting when someone, let's say, gets hit in the jaw or in the face or has is a breacher for our military or first responders where there's a lot of vibration We're not counting chokeholds that are done in training or in sports. And so there's so many different ways that the brain can be changed, and it accumulates over a lifetime. And if an individual has these high-risk experiences, child abuse, sexual assault, trafficking, if somebody's served in the military, if they're a first responder, if they played sports, if they were in a car accident, for individuals who have any combination of those, we know that they're in high-risk populations for having had one or more brain injuries. And then if that individual comes in with mental health symptoms, that's where we wanted to go with healing brain trauma, that it's both, that there can be an individual whose brain has been injured in a structural and functional way and who has sustained emotional trauma. And for Kathy and I bring the structure and functional piece of how the brain works.
And I bring in the mental health component, looking at trauma reactions. I've worked in the trauma field for feels like eons at this point. And so we think it's a marriage made in heaven.
Well, and certainly a good collaboration where we get to review cases and learn from each other and really explore this idea that is in some ways common sense, that it's all in your brain. Your emotions, your mental health lives in your brain, and brain injury, brain structure and function lives in your brain. So in healing brain trauma, what we want to do is explore this idea that the two of us bringing our different perspectives to brain trauma can really help find that pathway to healing. Kathy, tell us a little bit about your background. When did you get involved in mental health and why?
So I actually was a kindergarten teacher, and I also taught high school. And when I was teaching kindergarten, I would encounter several children that had major problems, and there was nothing I could do about it. As a kindergarten teacher, you're confined really to the classroom. And then I had decided to go back to school, to graduate school, and get my social work degree. And then I got my social work degree, and I focused on violence against women, particularly intimate partner violence, and I began writing a paper. And then I said, well, wait a second, if I'm writing a paper, why don't I just go for a PhD? And so that's what I did. Then I did a postdoc in family violence and then got an academic position. So I've just recently left that academic position, which gives me more time now to concentrate on different avenues, including healing brain trauma.
My background is that I was always interested in the brain from the time I was a little kid. I was always curious about where personality is and where new ideas come from and how people think and solve problems. And so with that curiosity, I started medical school. I'm trying to think. I was accepted to medical school when I was 17. I started medical school when I was 19. And in the 2 years before I went to medical school, I was absolutely fascinated by how people think and learn. And I wrote a master's thesis on attention deficit disorder. In those days, we differentiated ADD, attention deficit, from ADHD. Now it's under one moniker, ADHD. So it's always been fascinating to me about where attention and awareness lived in the brain and how to teach people differently and different learning styles. And so I took that into medical school and wanted to study the brain. And it turned out that I really loved operating. So the only way to combine those was to become a neurosurgeon. And my interest continued in epilepsy. I finished my residency at UC Davis and then my epilepsy fellowship at UC San Francisco. And it was an incredible time. We pioneered brain mapping. We pioneered neuronavigation and computer guidance for merged with new ways to map and understand the brain. We looked at brain function with functional MRI. And so for me, it's always just been a quest to understand what's going on in there. And that was when I eventually moved on to being the chief of the Mayo Clinic Network affiliate in Northern California and starting our TBI and concussion clinic and bringing in people with all kinds of different expertise like psychiatry and neurology and speech therapy and physical therapy to share in our work together. And then during COVID, we were seeing more women, and it was really clear to me that women who came in with domestic and intimate partner violence and traumatic brain injury were being treated as if their brain injury symptoms were mental health symptoms. And that was when we had the aha moment where we said, well, who else is getting treated for mental health symptoms and we're not seeing and understanding the brain injury? And that started the journey to work with veterans and first responders and survivors of human trafficking and substance use disorder and many other high-risk populations through the nonprofit. We started Safe Living Space so that we could really get the data of how many individuals in these high-risk mental health populations actually have an underlying brain injury or multiple brain injuries.
So I think as mental health providers, we need to understand or rule out the medical first before we go to a mental health diagnosis. In fact, that's if you're doing an accurate assessment, that's where you need to start first. So in my practice, I'll ask people, when was the last time you had a physical? When was the last time you saw your doctor? And so I start from there. Many diseases have a mental health component to them. So if you're talking about diabetes, you could have depression. You could have sexual dysfunction. So if you don't know that that person has diabetes and you're treating them for depression, you're just spinning your wheels. You're going round and round. And so I started, it's been a really long time now in my practice, that I start from the medical and assess from that point, not me personally, because I'm not an MD, but I have them get a medical assessment. If I think that there's a TBI, I will refer them for further diagnostic testing to see if there's a traumatic brain injury or has been in the past. In my population, that would be common because I deal with people who experience sexual violence or intimate partner violence. So I always want to rule that out first before I proceed. And again, in a mental health practice, you should be establishing safety first, and then you do an assessment.
You know, the idea that individuals over a lifetime have multiple brain injuries is something that is really important to discuss. We think about hits to the head. We think about football. More brain injuries come from intimate partner violence than from football. And those brain injuries might be repetitive without even a gap to heal. More injuries come from training and experiences that fly under the radar in the military. People who have been paratroopers and jump out of airplanes can lose consciousness for the first few hundred feet when they're above the oxygen level. Individuals who've trained with chokeholds, individuals who've worked in situations where they fired artillery and there was a vibratory component or worked as a breacher. We understand that there are whiplash-induced traumatic brain injuries, whiplash-associated traumatic brain injuries that are often not even counted today when we think about traumatic brain injury. And then pivoting back to your work, strangulation, suffocation, hypoventilation, I think that's another whole area where over a lifetime, an individual may have many of these events.
Absolutely. And then across the lifespan, never mind different populations, occupations, but across the lifespan, So I worry about my women who've been in long-term marriages experiencing intimate partner violence for decades. And does Alzheimer's or dementia await them? That is really a traumatic brain injury or brain trauma, and not been accurately diagnosed.
When there is a question of a brain injury, it opens up so many different ways to heal. And the old adage that if you have a brain injury, it's forever is not relevant today with the modern understanding that we have of the brain and all of the different therapies that are available to us. And, you know, from a neurosurgeon's perspective, the first thing we think about is just preventing the next injury. And what can individuals do to make safe choices or get safe if it's in a repeated exposure situation? And then giving the brain a chance to heal. And giving it time. And sometimes it can take a few weeks if it's a mild concussion. Sometimes it can take a couple of years if it's more involved. And then sometimes individuals need help with very targeted therapy, some of the rehabilitation therapies for individuals who have memory differences or word finding differences or have a hard time, you know, following oral instructions. If their boss says to them, I need you to do these three things, you know, making sure they know they've got to write those down. And then we come to strategies. If there are changes in the way the brain's functioning, being aware of those changes, making sure that you're not in a situation where you're gaslit again because of neurologic changes. And so I think when we think of the brain today, we really think about the ability to heal brain trauma. And when we think of brain trauma, we think of you and me working together. We think of healing brain trauma as the mental health side of the brain and the neurologic and functional side of the brain, and that those two are really one thing. So that's how we named our podcast, Healing Brain Trauma. It was to make sure that we gave voice both to the emotional trauma and to the neurologic elements of the brain. And then we want to bring forward the understanding that whether you come in the door that says TBI, traumatic brain injury and concussion, or you've been diagnosed with some of the mental health conditions such as anxiety, PTSD, suicidality, depression.
Anxiety.
A lot of those individuals, especially if they have all those or most of those diagnoses, you really want to think of root cause. You want to get behind the emotional trauma and you want to bring it back to the brain. And so our hope is that by working together, we're able to bring forward ideas that either one of us acting alone wouldn't see. We want to provide a holistic approach to the brain that includes both the mental health with the expertise that Dr. Monahan brings and the neurologic elements that I bring from my experience as a trauma neurosurgeon.
Well said, Amy.
Well, good. Well, we look forward to continuing these conversations and seeing where the conversations go. And our hope is that in these discussions, in these intersections between the neurologic part of the brain and the emotional and traumatic part of the brain, that we're able to help find healing for individuals and help bring the caregivers and the care providers, the mental health and medical providers, more information about that combined picture of what is brain trauma and what are some of the steps that we need to think about to heal brain trauma today.
Enjoying healing brain trauma? This podcast is part of Safe Living Spaces' mission supporting brain injury awareness. If you would like more information about this podcast, please check out our website at safelivingspace.org. Sign up for our Brain Brief newsletter and consider becoming a donor to carry on the important work at Healing Brain Trauma. Every gift helps us continue sharing expert insights and expanding brain injury awareness where we live, work, and play. The Healing Brain Trauma podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended to provide medical, physiological, or therapeutic advice. Listening to this podcast does not establish a doctor-patient or therapist-client relationship. If you or someone you care for needs medical or mental health support, please consult a qualified professional. See you next episode.